D. Mace, Vingen, and Donick, 102.5. The Game, Derek Mason, Adam Vingen, and David Janes here with you. Willie Donick with the day off. We basically begged Willie to take the day off because of how his throat sounds right now, how his voice sounds. As you heard, if you watched the Predators game last night, or if you've been listening to our show over the past couple of days, you can tell Willie was struggling. And after I heard him call the game-tying goal for Steven Stamkos, which hurt my throat listening to, I told him, we all told him, please don't come to work today. So Willie is at home resting. Mm-hmm. I hope he hasn't spoken a single word today. He needs to be a mime today. Or write things on a blackboard or whiteboard or something.
Just text.
That's right. I guess you could text.
Yes.
A little old-fashioned with the whiteboard or the blackboard, I guess. But we hope to have Willie back tomorrow. The Predators are back in action tomorrow, so someone needs to call the game. Let's continue reacting to what we heard from Mike Borgonzi earlier today. I as I said before, I liked that Mike Borgonzi did the news conference by himself. I thought he handled himself well. I thought he spoke confidently. I just, as I said before, when Brinker is there, first of all, Brinker overshadows Borgonzi. Mm-hmm. Go back to the news conference that Borgonzi and Brinker did when the Titans fired Brian Callahan. Now, I understand that Brinker probably had a lot more to do with the firing of Brian Callahan than Borgonzi, but Borgonzi I don't think Borgonzi answered a single question in that news conference, or maybe one. Mm-hmm. So I like the fact that Borgonzi was up there by himself. He addressed why the Titans didn't trade Jeffrey Simmons. He addressed why the Titans traded Jarvis Brownlee. He also did address why the Titans traded Roger McCreary. What did you make of his explanation on that?
Again, I get it. This was a guy, once again, we talked about this at the beginning of the season. This is a guy that was on an expiring contract. And he wasn't going, and I specifically said he wasn't going to be a part of their plans. I didn't think anyway. And they traded him away. And the explanation, I'm cool with the explanation, because if he's not going to be a part of what you are doing moving forward, and you knew that, you know, you weren't going to offer him a contract, or at least not anything that he would take seriously, then you allowed a player to move on. And like Borgonzi said, the Rams just so happened to show a lot of interest in McQuarrie, and they end up getting their fifth-round pick back. So that was a really good move, I believe, because you know a guy you're not going to sign back. You lost the fifth-round pick the year prior through a trade, and now you're able to regain that fifth-round pick from the Rams once again. So I get it. I think it was a good move. I think it also was a good move of trading Draymond Jones and getting what you got for him that could potentially be a fourth. If he gets two sacks in Baltimore and Baltimore goes to the playoffs, so it can't be and or. It has to be both.
It has to be both.
Yes. So that was a really good move. Because
I like that trade.
Exactly. Again, he knew the likelihood, because Draymond Jones was going to have a good season. And he was going to get paid somewhere. Somebody, I don't know if he had another year left on his contract or not, but he was going to want a new deal eventually. So why not, again, get something for him? Because he's not going to be a part, as good as he was playing, he wasn't going to be a part of your plans moving forward. And I'm talking about the immediate future. I'm not talking 3 years, you know, down the line. I'm talking about next season.
The one thing that I wished the Titans would have done more of, I mean, frankly, I wish they would have traded more players. Mm-hmm. I wish they would have traded Arden Key. I wish they would have traded Chigakonkwo. I know there were reports about Calvin Ridley. And I believe Borgonzi addressed this as well. We'll get that clip in just a moment. But I do wish that the Titans... Look, I know Borgonzi doesn't want to strip this thing down to the studs, but, well, let me say this. It will be fascinating to watch the New York Jets for the rest of this season and over the next couple of years, because the New York Jets traded Sauce Gardner. The New York Jets traded Quinnen Williams. I believe there was a report that Quincy Williams, which who is Quincy Williams? They're brothers, right? Quinnen Williams and Quincy Williams. I believe they're related. There was a report today that Quincy Williams is losing his starting job with the New York Jets, former All-Pro linebacker. So I'm interested to watch the Jets because I think a lot of Titans fans, and I may put myself in this category as well, Derek, I think a lot of Titans fans wished the Titans did what the Jets did yesterday. Trade everything you can that has any sort of value. So I want to see what the Jets look like now. Are the Jets even remotely competitive the rest of the season after losing, you know, a top defensive tackle, an All-Pro corner? So I think that will be fascinating. Like, Titans fans, this could have been your life if the Jets just completely fall off over the next couple of months. So I that's something I'm going to be watching as well.
Yeah, and a lot of other people will be as well. You know, closer to, let's just keep it here. I think Titans fans are going to be watching from afar, especially during the draft, to see what the Jets ultimately do with their picks. And then after that, how many of those picks turn out to be, say, day one starters. So this is always going to be something that, frankly, we look back on, Titan fans look back on, because if it backfires by not making these moves, then you're going to hear about this all day, every day, and it ain't going to be good. At least from your fan base, you're going to hear about it. Because what are they going to say? Well, the Jets gave up all those picks for Quinn. You know, they got all those picks for Quinn Williams and Sauce Gardner. And all we had to do was trade Jeffrey Simmons and Aaron Key or somebody, and we would have got some of those picks. We needed those picks. So he understands that will be coming if what he envisions doesn't happen, you know, quickly. So whether, you know, the Titans, whether it works out or not, as far as whether it's the right thing or the wrong thing with them not making any trades today, well, yesterday, with the exception of the two, and when I mean trades, I mean the bigger trades that everybody was looking at, the Calvin Ridleys or the Jeffrey Simmons or the Arden Keys, guys like that, even Chick Okonkwo, you know, Trevor brought that up last yesterday, too. So, because you didn't make those moves, your fan base is watching very closely now, and they want to see what you do. That's why it was good for Borgonzi to come out the day after and explain to the fan base, because he was right. You know, there have been some moves where he's heard about it. He's telling you he's heard about it. You know, he's telling you yesterday they were listening, because what did he say? Yeah, people were, you know, or shocked we didn't make that move or this move.
He called the Jarvis Brownlee trade controversial.
Exactly.
Because so, he knows what the reaction was.
Exactly. So he's listening. They're listening, you know. So, listen, if it doesn't work, then he's going to have to hear it. But I'm with him when you're talking about, you know, not trading Jeffrey Simmons, at least not for what was given to the Jets for Quinn Williams, because frankly, people think that Quinn, you know, Jeffrey Simmons is better. So if he's better, I want more. That's just the way that's just the way it is. If I think my product is better, then I'm going to command more, not less than what you just gave that guy. And his product isn't like my product. No way, no how. But, you know, I understand why he didn't trade Jeff. And I'm okay with it. Now, this, you know who this affects the most?
Who's that?
This affects Jeffrey Simmons the most. Because now what they're saying is, you are our leader. You're the face right now. You are. Because you are the biggest draw. And they did not move you. And they said, nope. We ain't moving, Jeffrey. I don't care what you, we are not moving. That's what you say about quarterbacks. That's what you say about elite top tier players, guys that are you know, the DNA of your organization or what your organization to be. So they just told Jeffrey Simmons, you are until Cam Ward gets up to speed, and he's lagging right now, but he's a rookie. You expect that. But until he gets up to speed, you are our face. You are our leader. Now it's what do you do with that? I think he's going to be great, but what do you do with that? I don't think anybody thought about that. Like, how much of a spotlight now it puts on Jeffrey Simmons?
So Mike Borgonzi was asked today about not making more trades before the deadline. Here's how he responded.
I thought you guys might be more active leading up to the trade deadline as well.
Yeah.
I wonder how much did injuries maybe to some players play a part in maybe not making more deals?
No. You know, we look at everything and the value of it and who's valuable for the team right now. And there's some guys who are on expiring deals this year that we still have 8 games here to evaluate, and they've done some good things.
I guess maybe to follow, guys. Yeah, just to follow on that, I guess how much do you balance, as you said, building for the future, but you still want to have field a somewhat competitive team?
Sure, just balance that. We've got 8 games left. And, you know, if we thought there was a value there, like I said, we talked to 31 other teams. I'm not going to get into every discussion we had. And, you know, a lot of teams have called us, obviously. You know, we weren't looking to acquire players at this point. It's more for draft capital for the future. But, yeah, that all comes into play.
Caleb on our text line says, is Jeffrey Simmons supposed to be back playing after the bye? I don't know.
Yeah.
We'll find out. Hamstrings can be tricky. Mm-hmm. So I don't think any determination has been made about when Jeffrey Simmons will be back. I assume he'll try to give it a go when the Titans return to practice next week. They are off this weekend. One texter on our text line, driven by Wilson County, Hyundai.com, says, I feel like Mike Borgonzi is not trying to blow smoke up our asses, and it's been a long time. I wish he came on to tell us Brinker was fired, because as long as he's around, it's going to be a question mark. And I think it would be in the Titans' best interest to allow Mike Borgonzi to be the face of the front office. Mm-hmm. I know a lot of people are curious about Chad Brinker and his influence in the organization, and we'll get more into that because that was addressed today as well. But as I've said, I like the way Borgonzi handled himself today, and I think if the Titans want to give off the vibe that they know what they're doing, I think you leave Chad Brinker in the back. Let Chad Brinker be the supreme ruler of football behind the scenes, in the shadows, whatever you want to say. Let Borgonzi be the public face of the front office. Let Borgonzi take the lead on the coaching search. Let Borgonzi take the lead on transactions. He's got the winning pedigree from Kansas City. You can sell that. So I think if this is the beginning of Mike Borgonzi's going to be handling all of this, I think that's the right call.
It should be. He's the GM. I don't, you know, and again, Brinker, I'm sure he does his job, whatever they're asking him to do, and he's doing it very well, according to them. So I'm not going to sit here and diminish what he does for the team. But nobody wants to see him. Like the fans doesn't want to see the guy above the GM. They just want to see the GM because they hadn't been able to see him, or they hadn't been able to listen to him talk one-on-one and him describe this team. They finally got it. And you know what it was? It was Barry. It's Barry Trotz in the flesh. He was honest. He told you, our roster's not that good. We don't have many leaders. This is why I did certain things. This guy didn't mesh well with the locker room. He didn't throw anybody under the bus, but he explained it in a way that people was like, okay, I know what you mean. I get it. You are being professional, and you know that just because it didn't work here with a player doesn't mean he can't go somewhere else, and it worked there. So he gave you answers in a way that I think Barry does it. Barry may be more, a little bit more truthful and go in depth, but I think he did what Barry did. And maybe the Titans are taking a page out of that whenever they're on. Like, just put the GM on and just be honest with your fan base. That's all you got to do. And he did it. From what I saw, that's what he did in his press conference.
Joel on our text line says, so is Jeffrey Simmons the only capable leader? Like your mid-morning show, if Simmons is traded, it's next man up. And another texter along similar lines brought up how ironic it is that we talk about how great, you know, Kevin Byard could have been for Jarvis Brownlee, but we're looking to trade Jeffrey Simmons as a Titans fan. So, look, I'm feeling a bit conflicted because I still very much am on the side of the Titans should have traded Jeffrey Simmons. And look, the Titans can still trade Jeffrey Simmons.
Oh, yeah.
They can still trade Jeffrey Simmons in the offseason. He'll be healed from his hamstring injury. You've got the Quinn and Williams trade as the blueprint. If you're the Titans, you can say the asking price for Jeffrey Simmons starts at the Quinn and Williams deal. And we think Jeffrey Simmons has been playing better than Quinn and Williams, so we may ask you for a little bit more. But the bare minimum we will accept in the trade for Jeffrey Simmons is what Quinn and Williams went for to the Cowboys. So it doesn't have to happen. I get it. A lot of us wanted to see it happen by yesterday. It could still happen in the offseason. At the same time, I'm hearing what you're saying, Derek, and I do think there is value in trying to build that culture. Again, I thought the most illuminating comment Mike Borgonzi made today was when discussing the trade of Jarvis Brownlee 6 weeks later. He said, we don't have the culture right now to make a leader out of Jarvis Brownlee. So they believe that Jeffrey Simmons has more value as a leader than a first-round pick and a second-round pick.
It's not even making a leader out of Jarvis Brownlee. It's just allowing him the space to grow into the player he's going to be with veteran guys. It's easier for a young guy when he has veteran guys around to grow into what he's going to ultimately be. Why? Because those veteran guys keep them sort of in check, keep those guardrails around a young player, whether it's a young defensive back, whether it's a young wide receiver, pull him to the side, talk to him, let him know, hey, it's long season, whatever. You're able. And then when he sort of is getting a little antsy, that veteran guy is able to kind of, you know, hey, they don't have enough of those guys. One guy can't be running around to 52 other players, well, 51 other players. He just can't do it. It's too much. So this team doesn't have enough of those guys that has been in the league long enough that has matured into leaders. Do they got young guys? Listen, this is another reason quickly. When you talk about, okay, there has to be other leaders on this team or guys that could potentially be on this team, you know, leaders on this team. Pollard is from a different team, got drafted by a different team. Calvin Ridley is from a different team. We're talking about guys, older guys. Lloyd Cushenberry is from a different team, and he was hurt. Kevin Zeitler just got here, and he's from a different team. Y'all hear what I'm saying? Dan Moore, first year, he's from a different team. Joseph Day, he's came from a different team. Who else? Let me see. Arden Key, Xavier Woods. We can go down the line. And the only guy that has been here is Jeff. And he's grown into that leadership. But the other guys that they're depending on, they're young guys. Cam Ward, Alec Allmanner, DK, Gunnar Helm, Cedric Gray. Guys like that are young. Daryl Baker Jr. These guys are young. Can they ultimately be leaders one day? I'm sure Cedric Gray will be one of the leaders. I guarantee you. But right now, he's not there yet. I'm not saying that he doesn't show leadership. I'm just saying he's not at a point where we can say, okay, you are our leader. Jeffrey is, and he's probably the only one at this point. Because Amani Hooker, but he's not playing well. So I get why I get when people say, well, you trade away Jeff, you get the most. I understand that. I don't understand that. But I also know that sometimes having that veteran in your locker room that shows leadership trumps trying to get an extra pick or two.
615-737-1025. We will continue to take your thoughts on Mike Borgonzi's news conference post-NFL trade deadline. He talked Jeffrey Simmons. He talked Jarvis Brownlee. He talked about the direction of the franchise. What did you like? What didn't you like about what you heard from Mike Borgonzi today? 615-737-1025. Coming up next, we'll take a quick Titans breather. We'll discuss the first CFP rankings released last night. Vanderbilt lands at number 16. What did we learn about the committee's priorities? We'll discuss that coming up next. Derek Mason and Adam Vingan, we are presented to you by Bax Homeworks. Financing options are available to make your remodel easier than you think. With Bax Homeworks, get a free estimate at baxhomeworks.com. D-Mays, Vingan, and Donick, 102.5 The Game. Derek Mason, Adam Vingan here with you. Willie Donick out today. We send our well wishes to Willie Donick. He's been under the weather. We hope to have Willie back tomorrow when we are at Bridgestone Arena. Predators and Flyers, 7 o'clock puck drop. 6 o'clock pregame, as always, right here on 102.5 The Game. Speaking of games you can hear on our networks, the Vanderbilt Commodores will take on the Auburn Tigers this Saturday. Pregame begins at 1:30 on 94.9 The Fan. Kickoff is at 3. Vanderbilt football is brought to you by Gary Force, Acura, Jimmy Kelly Steakhouse, and Smoky Mountain Tops. I'm incredibly disappointed that the Auburn Tigers fired Hugh Freeze because it would have given Diego Pavia one more opportunity to beat Hugh Freeze. He would have been, he is 3-0 in his career. Well, he'll finish 3-0 in his collegiate career against Hugh Freeze. So Diego Pavia was Hugh Freeze's personal boogeyman. But now that the Tigers have fired Hugh Freeze, Diego Pavia will not get a fourth opportunity to beat Hugh Freeze. But the CFP rankings came out last night, and the Commodores landed at number 16. Out of 25, Tennessee, by the way, at 25, Vanderbilt at number 16. And Derek, as we've been talking about this over the last couple of days, you said that Vanderbilt needed to be in that first four out section in order to really have a chance to make it into the actual college football playoff field. By the way, here is how the college football playoff bracket would look based on the rankings in week one, of the first rankings. Ohio State, number one. Indiana, number two. Texas A&M, number three. Alabama, number four. Remember, it's a straight seeding format this season. The conference champions are not guaranteed buys into the quarterfinals. So Ohio State, one. Indiana, two. Texas A&M, three. Alabama, four. Those four clubs would get buys into the quarterfinals. The first round matchups: 12th ranked Memphis at 5th ranked Georgia, 9th ranked Oregon at 8th ranked Texas Tech, 11th ranked Virginia at 6th ranked Ole Miss, 10th ranked Notre Dame at 7th ranked BYU. So, Derek, when you look at where Vanderbilt is ranked in the college football playoff rankings, look, there are going to be more of these. There are still games left to play, but it's a good. It's a good exercise in what Vanderbilt needs to do. I think both you and I thought this is around the area Vanderbilt would be. Are you feeling better, worse, or neutral about their hopes to make the college football playoff based on the rankings last night?
The way they were talking last night, Texas is probably the only team that can lose three games and still make it to the college football playoffs. The way they were talking last night.
Texas has a tough schedule remaining. They're at Georgia next Saturday. They host Arkansas. They wrap up the regular season at home against Texas A&M. So if they go 2-1, which means they win either at Georgia at, or at home against Texas A&M, they will have played. They open the season at Ohio State. They lost there. They beat Oklahoma. They beat Vanderbilt. I mean, I think a 9-3 Texas has a legitimate shot.
So if you're telling me a 9-3 Texas has a legitimate shot, you're telling me a 9-3 Vandy has no shot.
Oh,
whatsoever.
Absolutely. The first and thing, even, first things first.
Yes.
Vanderbilt has to win out.
Yeah, that's what they have to
they
do.
They can't lose again. It's going to take more than that, but the first thing is the Commodores must run the table, which means they need to beat Auburn at home, they need to beat Kentucky at home, and they need to go to Neyland Stadium and beat Tennessee.
Yeah, I would assume if that does happen, because no matter what, you still got Ohio State, Michigan. And nobody knows how that turns out. So that would give Ohio State a loss. I know in the big scheme of things, Ohio State would still end up making it with one loss. But these are things that can happen as the season goes on. You look at other teams that are ahead of Vanderbilt. If Vandy just wins, and I do believe this, if they win every game from here on out, they make it. I'm not sure why you leave them out if they win the remainder of their games. I get it, the teams that they played at the beginning, you know, they were ranked, but, you know, a few of those teams have fallen off. But yet and still, they beat those teams at that point when they were ranked. They had a hard-fought one with Missouri, but they found a way to win. That's what good teams do. They found a way to win. They were toe-to-toe with Alabama. Two key mistakes cost them the game. Texas, they showed they had some resolve, a lot of resolve. They came back in that game. So you just can't dismiss Vandy and say, oh, they 10-2, but they're not, they wouldn't qualify, or they haven't proven that they're one of the top 12 teams in college football. If they went out, they would have shown, you have to look at that as saying they are one of the top teams in the country and they deserve to be in a college football playoff. But if they lose a game, you might as well forget it.
Right. No, they can't lose another game. No. That's first and foremost. But Aria Gerson of the Tennessean makes this interesting point. So the win at South Carolina, the win against LSU, they don't matter as much anymore because those teams have fallen off. Aria points out, quote, the Commodores' only win over a CFP-ranked team is over number 22 Missouri. Even winning out would not help this aspect, as Tennessee came in at number 25 and would almost certainly fall out of the rankings with a loss to Vanderbilt. So it's a bit of a catch-22, no?
She's saying
that the Commodores' only win against a CFP-ranked opponent is Missouri, who's number 22, right?
Yes.
She is saying that even if Vanderbilt wins out, which we agree they have to do, that means a win against Tennessee, which is ranked 25th. But if Vanderbilt beats Tennessee, Tennessee is probably falling out of the rankings.
Oh, of course.
So that win doesn't look as impressive.
But see, and herein lies the problem. I don't care where the team is weeks after I play them. Where were they when I played them? They were number whatever. Okay, I beat them. Where was this team? Okay, I beat them. Yeah, I lost to this team. Hard fought battle. Lost to this team. Will Vandy be the only team that would be guilty of something like this? Like beating a team early in the season. If that's the case, really, outside of Texas, Ohio State don't have no big wins. Penn State is gone, but we know by the eye test, Ohio State is probably the best team, if not the second best team in the country, by the eye test. If you look at their record, they don't have no big wins other than Texas, and people are writing Texas off for a minute there until they beat Vandy. So now all of a sudden, that don't work for Vandy, but it works for Ohio State or some other team. That's the part I don't like. Like, oh, well, they played them when they, what are they now? I don't care what they are now. When we played them, they were ranked here, and we beat them. When we played this team, they were ranked here, so forth and so on. So somebody has to lose. And if you beat a top 10 team, typically that team's going to drop. Or if you beat a top 20 team, that team's going to drop.
So, for example, Oregon. Oregon is 7-1.
Oregon shouldn't be up there if that's the case.
Oregon's marquee win this season was a double overtime win at Penn State. when Penn State was ranked third in the country. And Penn State is nowhere near third in the country anymore. They lost at home to Indiana.
It wasn't just a loss. It was a beatdown.
30-20 was the final score.
It was a beatdown. They weren't even closer than that. It wasn't close.
But Oregon has three games remaining against ranked opponents. I believe all three of these teams were in the CFP rankings. Iowa, USC, and Washington.
So if they beat Iowa, that puts them out. Because right now, Iowa is what? 20. So say if they beat Iowa, and Iowa has a tough game this week against SC, I believe. Is it SC? They have a tough game.
Oregon plays Iowa this weekend.
So then Oregon beats Iowa. Iowa falls further down the road. So you can't use that same logic. Well, Vandy, when they play, see, it to me, this is a way they try to get, they make excuses or whatnot for the teams they want in. Because we can say that about just about every team on this thing, with the exception of Indiana. Indiana's damn good. But every other team, Alabama's good too. But every other team, yeah, at the beginning of the season, they beat, and then look at where those teams are at now. A lot of them have fallen. So now that only applies to Vandy. So if Vandy wins out, they still going to have to sort of bogart their way into the club. Because, when we played these teams, they were ranked, but they're not ranked anymore. That don't make no sense.
615-737-1025. We will take your thoughts on the first CFP rankings. Vanderbilt lands at number 16. 615-737-1025. Derek Mason, Adam Vingan, 1025, the game. D-Mace, Vingan, and Donick, 1025, the game. Derek Mason, Adam Vingan here with you. Jonathan Hutton from Hot Mike with Hutton and Withrow will join us in roughly 15 minutes. At 5:20, we will have Silly Underdog Picks. I will be serving as acting commissioner with Willie Donick on the shelf today. Be listening during the 5 o'clock hour for the cue to call to represent the people. The people won last week. Mm. The people picked Oklahoma to beat Tennessee. And the winner got tickets to see Bryan Adams at Bridgestone Arena.
Okay.
The prize this week, if you represent the people and pick correctly, a pair of tickets for Music City Madness when the Tennessee Volunteers play the Illinois Fighting Illini at Bridgestone Arena on Saturday, December 6th. That's men's basketball, by the way. Mm-hmm. So if you want a pair of tickets to see the Vols basketball team at Bridgestone Arena in about a month from now, be listening for the cue to call in the 5 o'clock hour to represent the people in Silly Underdog Picks. We're talking the CFP rankings. Vanderbilt lands at number 16, so the Commodores are out of the field. Again, quickly, The 12-team bracket projection based on the first CFP rankings. Ohio State, Indiana, Texas A&M, and Alabama go right to the quarterfinals. First-round matchups, Memphis at Georgia, Oregon at Texas Tech, Virginia at Ole Miss, Notre Dame at BYU. And we're talking about the path for Vanderbilt to get into the 12-team field. First things first, the Commodores cannot lose another game. Mm-mm. It's as simple as that. They also need some help. Aria Gerson of the Tennessean spells it out well. Quote, to get in the top seven non-champions, meaning conference champions, Vanderbilt needs to be ranked higher than Texas and Oklahoma, meaning Texas and Oklahoma must lose another game. The Commodores will also likely need one of the Big 12 teams, or Notre Dame, to fail to qualify for the playoff. The easiest path for this to happen would be BYU sweeping Texas Tech, giving the Red Raiders three losses, or for Notre Dame to pick up a third loss. So there is a path for Vanderbilt.
But it's a narrow path.
But it's going to be tough.
It's a narrow path, but it's a path. And this is where it's not about if you lose, it's when you lose. It's when you lose these games or when you win these games. Because say, now you play, one of these teams that were not ranked. If you were a ranked team and you
Vanderbilt plays Auburn on Saturday. Auburn.
Yeah. Say for Auburn's sake. Say it wouldn't have been good playing. It would have been good for Auburn if they played Vandy at the beginning, because what has bore out was Vandy's been a good team. Mm-hmm. So if you play Vandy early in the season and you win, that holds a lot of weight. It hurts Vandy because ultimately Auburn's not a good team, but it helps Auburn in a sense. You play them late in the season, and say they started off as a good team and they end up being right outside the top 25. That victory doesn't help you. Doesn't help you at all. I think it should help you more if you play them at the beginning of the season and they're ranked. But obviously that's not the case. At least that's what the voters are saying. It's not necessarily – it's where did you play – when did you play them and where were they ranked at that time, and then subsequently where were they ranked, say, 2-3 weeks later? They take all that into account. Not, instead of just saying, where was that team ranked when you played them and you beat them? And you were the team that started the downfall for this team. Doesn't mean that team's bad. Maybe they lost 3 games. Is that a bad team? Or is this a team that ends up going through a gauntlet of a schedule and ends up falling out of top 20, top 25, top 20? The SEC will have that. A 3-loss team or 4-loss team that ends up falling way down in the ranks. But that's still a good team, and it's, they got 4 losses. Why? Because they played in the toughest conference in America. It's good for Texas, but it's not good for Vandy. You see what I'm saying? Texas can lose again, and Vandy can't.
Well, Texas has 2 top 5 teams on its remaining schedule. So those would be, quote-unquote, good losses.
Mm-hmm.
Versus Vanderbilt losing to Auburn or Kentucky. Those would not be good losses.
No, not now. I mean, ever anyway, because neither one of them were ranked during the season. But I'm saying when you play a ranked team at the beginning of the season, say the first 3 or 4 weeks, why should that be held against you if that team then falls out of the top 20 or top 25?
So Ralph Russo of The Athletic, who covers college football, had his breakdown of the first college football playoff rankings and looked at some scenarios for each major conference. So for the SEC, scenario one, he calls the Fantastic Four. Texas A&M, Alabama, Georgia, and Ole Miss all went out in the regular season, eliminating Texas, Missouri, and Oklahoma along the way. Add in Vanderbilt taking another loss, and that would leave the SEC with 4 teams with at least 11 wins and nobody else with a strong claim to make the field.
Here's another thing that can hurt Vandy.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not even UT. It is in a sense, but it's not them playing each other. If UT lose to Florida, that Vandy game, that really, what does that mean for Vandy in a sense? Because now UT just fell off, they fell out of top 25. So if we are going to, you know, sort of gauge everybody on the same thing, wouldn't that be that's not a good win if they win, right? Would it be a good win? Because UT's out of the top 25, and they lost to an unranked team, Florida team, even though we know how that rivalry is.
Scenario two, which Ralph Russo calls Greg Sankey's dream. There is a way to get to the end of the regular season with 7 SEC teams at 10-2 or better. The most difficult part of that scenario is Texas sweeping Georgia and Texas A&M, but getting Vanderbilt and the winner of Missouri-Oklahoma to 10-2 would only require a couple of modest upsets. Scenario 3, horns up. The haters will say it's not real, but at least a couple of SEC teams could finish 9-3 and make a case to be in the CFP, none more so than Texas, which could split with Georgia and Texas A&M and add that victory to wins against Oklahoma and Vanderbilt. Yes, Florida would be a bad loss, but as of now, nobody has played Ohio State closer than Texas. This is already making fans angry.
Exactly.
So writes.
It's like, so Texas close loss to Ohio State, it's more acceptable than Vandy's close loss to Alabama and their close loss to Texas. Even though I know they had to make a comeback, but yet and still, Texas is okay. We're good. Texas, you good. You play Ohio State, the number one team in the nation, close. But Vandy plays 2 top-ranked teams and play them both close, and that's counted against Vandy. You see how that don't make sense? It really doesn't.
I have a headache.
I know.
I have a headache.
It's so much. But this is
just
why we like
to play all of these things out.
This is why it's chaos, and that's what they want.
Right. Really, when it comes down to it for the Commodores, you just have to win.
Yes.
You cannot lose another game this season. And it would help if Vanderbilt went to Tennessee in this scenario and won dominantly. I don't know if that's going to happen. We'll see. Lenny on our text line says, Texas is a non-issue. They are going to lose two more games. I don't know that.
Yeah, amen.
Texas looked pretty damn good on Saturday. Maybe they have finally figured things out. So that game at home at the end of the season against Texas A&M looms large. One texter says, what about Louisville? They are 7-1, and they beat Miami when they were number two in Miami, and they've only lost, and their only loss was to Virginia. Again, all of this is making my head hurt. It's just one college football playoff rankings. I think Vanderbilt is appropriately seeded based on what happened on Saturday. I'm curious where Vanderbilt would have been ranked had they beaten Texas.
I think they would be in Texas spot.
Yeah.
11. Somewhere around they 11, would probably 12, be, 11, 10, 11.
The Commodores would probably be the first team out of the field had they beaten Texas.
No, I think if they would have beaten Texas, you would have had – see, here's the thing. If they would have beaten Texas, looking at what this, what the committee, how they voted, you would have had to put them in front of Notre Dame. You would have had to because they would have better wins than Notre Dame.
Man, you can really tie yourself in knots trying to figure out what all of this is. We'll have Jonathan Hutton help us. He's good at this. We'll have Jonathan Hutton help us out with what the first CFP rankings told us. We'll also get into the NFL trade deadline with our friend Jonathan Hutton. Coming up next, 615-737-1025. Greg Roberts on our text line says, an AI-powered BCS solves all the issues. No. That was one of the reasons I didn't love college football when I was younger. When I was younger, I was like, wait a minute. The championship game is determined by a computer? That's really dumb. Like, that was one thing that had me out on college football when I was younger. So no BCS 2.0, Greg. Do not put that evil on me. 615-737-1025. Jonathan Hutton will join us next. Derek Mason, Adam Vingan, 1025 The Game.